Chapter 82. "That's strange," apostrophe said the dwarf, musing. "So we remarked to each other at the time," apostrophe returned Dick coolly, "but quite true." Apostrophe, Quilp was plainly staggered by this intelligence, over which he brooded for some time in moody silence, often raising his eyes to Mr. Swiveller's face, and sharply scanning its expression. As he could read in it, however, no additional information or anything to lead him to believe he had spoken falsely, and as Mr. Swiveller, left to his own meditations, sighed deeply, and was evidently growing maudlin on the subject of Mrs. Cheggs, the dwarf soon broke up the conference, and took his departure, leaving the bereaved one to his melancholy ruminations. "Have been brought together, eh?" Apostrophe apostrophe said the dwarf as he walked the streets alone. "My friend has stolen a march upon me. It led him to nothing, and therefore is no great matter, save in the intention. I'm glad he has lost his mistress. Ha ha! The blockhead mustn't leave the law at present. I'm sure of him where he is, whenever I want him for my own purposes, and, besides, he's a good unconscious spy on brass, and tells, in his cups, all that he sees and hears. You're useful to me, Dick, and cost nothing but a little treating now and then. I am not sure that it may not be worthwhile, before long, to take credit with the stranger, Dick, by discovering your designs upon the child, but for the present we'll remain the best friends in the world, with your good leave." Apostrophe, pursuing these thoughts, and gasping as he went along, after his own peculiar fashion, Mr. Quilp once more crossed the Thames, and shut himself up in his bachelor's hall, which, by reason of its newly erected chimney depositing the smoke inside the room, and carrying none of it off, was not quite so agreeable as more fastidious people might have desired. Such inconveniences, however, instead of disgusting the dwarf with his new abode, rather suited his humor. So, after dining luxuriously from the public house, he lighted his pipe, and smoked against the chimney until nothing of him was visible through the mist, but a pair of red, entirely inflamed eyes, with sometimes a dim vision of his head and face, as, in a violent fit of coughing, he slightly stirred the smoke, and scattered the heavy wreaths by which they were obscured. In the midst of this atmosphere, which must infallibly have smothered any other man, Mr. Quilp passed the evening with great cheerfulness, solacing himself all the time with the pipe and the case bottle, and occasionally entertaining himself with a melodious howl, intended for a song, but bearing not the faintest resemblance to any scrap of any piece of music, vocal or instrumental, ever invented by man. Thus he amused himself until nearly midnight, when he turned into his hammock with the utmost satisfaction. The first sound that met his ears in the morning as he half opened his eyes, and, finding himself so unusually near the ceiling, entertained a drowsy idea that he must have been transformed into a fly or blue bottle in the course of the night, was that of a stifled sobbing and weeping in the room. Peeping cautiously over the side of his hammock, he descried Mrs. Quilp, to whom, after contemplating her for some time in silence, he communicated a violent start by suddenly yelling out, "Halloa! Apostrophe apostrophe, oh, Quilp! Apostrophe apostrophe," cried his poor little wife, looking up. "How you frightened me! Apostrophe apostrophe, I meant to, you jade!" apostrophe returned the dwarf. "What do you want here?" "I'm dead, and I?" Apostrophe, "Oh, please come home, do come home," apostrophe said Mrs. Quilp, sobbing. "We'll never do so anymore, Quilp, and after all it was only a mistake that grew out of our anxiety." Apostrophe, "Out of your anxiety," apostrophe grinned the dwarf. "Yes, I know that, out of your anxiety for my death. I shall come home when I please, I tell you. I shall come home when I please, and go when I please. I'll be a will-o'-the-wisp, now here, now there, dancing about you always, starting up when you least expect me, and keeping you in a constant state of restlessness and irritation. Will you beckon?" Apostrophe, Mrs. Quilp durst only make a gesture of entreaty. I tell you no, apostrophe cried the dwarf. No. If you dare to come here again, unless you're sent for, I'll keep watchdogs in the yard that'll growl and bite. I'll have man traps, cunningly altered and improved for catching women. I'll have spring guns that shall explode when you tread upon the wires and blow you into little pieces. Will you beggin? Apostrophe, do forgive me. Do come back, apostrophe said his wife, earnestly. No, oh, 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 oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, roared Quilp. Not till my own good time, and then I'll return again as often as I choose, and be accountable to nobody for my goings or comings. You see the door there. Will you go? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Quilp delivered this last command in such a very energetic voice, and moreover accompanied it with such a sudden gesture, indicative of an intention to spring out of his hammock, and, nightcapped as he was, bear his wife home again through the public streets, that she sped away like an arrow. Her worthy lord stretched his neck and eyes until she had crossed the yard, and then, not at all sorry to have had this opportunity of carrying his point and asserting the sanctity of his castle, fell into an immoderate fit of laughter and laid himself down to sleep again. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.